Hare Krishna. So welcome back. We'll continue with our discussion on these four principles. In the first session I talked about accept, how when some situation in our life or in our relationships doesn't turn out to be the way we expected it to be. So maturity means that we just don't cry physically or mentally, but we accept the situation. So accepting is not condoning or capitulating or approving. Accepting simply means we call off our war with reality so that we can focus our energy on dealing with the issue that actually is there, rather than dealing with our frustration about how it is not the way we wanted it to be. So before I move on to ascertain, I would like to give one more example. Let me start it. Suppose we were going from a place A to place B. You know, we are driving. And we just have enough fuel in the car to get from place A to place B. At that time, before we start our journey, if we put a hole in the fuel tank, and then that fuel, as we are moving forward, that fuel is leaking out. And the quantity of fuel we have, it will run out half the way maybe. So if we have finite amount of fuel, then we want to use all of it to get to our destination. So that fuel is like our energy. We all are finite beings and our energy is also finite. So whatever energy we have, we would like to use it to deal with the situation that we are facing. But when we refuse to accept, when we resent the reality, then that is like inside us itself, the energy from within which is meant to come out, there is a hole in the fuel tank. And that energy is getting dissipated within us. So our resentment is like a hole in our inner fuel tank, which doesn't allow the energy to be used by the vehicle for driving. It just gets wasted. So like that, we need to save our energy. Now, first step is, okay, this is how it is. Now, ascertain means, now why is it like this? Why is this person like this? Now, some people be very insensitive, very irresponsible, very lazy, very whatever. They may be frustrating our expectations in various ways. Now, in the case of relationships, especially in dealing with people, why people act the way they do, that is not so easy to understand. So that's why ascertain means that we are actually trying to find out what is going on. Can you go to the next slide? Yeah. So, value judgments we often make about others, and they cloud our inner vision. Value judgments means, oh, this person is irresponsible, this person is lazy, this person is uncultured, this person is like this, this person is like that. These are all value judgments that we pass about others. And they cloud our inner inner vision. Suppose now, let's do a simple exercise. We are sitting now, spread out your hands. Can you do this? Just spread out your hands. And then bring your hands right in front of your eyes, as close to the eyes as possible. Now let the hands cover your eyes, and now try to look ahead. What can you see? Practically nothing. Even if you, no matter how much you try to see, if I tell you, use your willpower, see properly, it's of no use. Now, just move your hands aside. Move your hand. Now see. Now you can see very easily. So now hands are physical devices, physical things, and if they are blocking our vision, we can easily understand it. But just as our eyes can be blocked by the hands in front of us, similarly, our inner vision can be blocked by our value judgments. When we make value judgments about others, we don't see people as they are. We see people as we think they are. we have got certain opinions about others. This is in psychology, it's called as an ascription error. Now, we see certain behaviors and we ascribe certain motivations for those behaviors. And we ascribe certain personality traits based on that behavior. What do I mean? Say, if we have a negative opinion about someone, and we see that person eating a lot, there is such a glutton. Now, if somebody we like, and we see them eating a lot, say, they must have been hungry. Now, if we see somebody who we have a negative opinion, we see them sleeping. Such a lazy person. If somebody we like, they see them sleeping. Maybe they're tired. Maybe they're sick. We don't know. So what happens? The action itself remains the same. But we rarely see the action as it is. We, along with the action, there is some judgment, some evaluation that we do. And that evaluation does not necessarily arise from the action alone. That same action, we could arrive at different inferences. Somebody sleeping, they're lazy, that could be one inference. They're sick could be another inference. But what happens is, based on our preconceptions, we arrive at certain inferences. And those inferences, after some time, we start affixing them on people. And then everything that they do, we start evaluating from that. Suppose we have decided this person is very rude. And then one day they start talking very politely with us. You say, what does he want from me? Maybe want something, that's why he's flattering me now. He's speaking so sweetly to me. Now it may be like that, it may not be like that. It may well be that one or two times when we met them, somehow they were under a lot of pressure and he spoke something which we thought was rude. But maybe they're not habitually rude. Maybe what we are seeing them right now is the way they are. We don't know. So what happens? Once we make a value judgment about someone, all their actions we start seeing through that filter. And that causes a lot of problems. The Bhagavad Gita in the 16th chapter says that a characteristic of the godly people is apaishunam. Apaishunam means aversion to fault finding. That they don't like to see faults in others. But quite often, we not only see faults, we see only faults. Even when somebody is doing good, once you have got a negative opinion about that person, it is good also, some bad motive must be there behind it. That's how we start seeing. And sometimes we make completely off track when we make these kind of value judgments. At one time, many years ago, maybe 10-15 years ago, I was in Radha Gopinath temple and there was a festival. So after the festival, there was a feast. So after the festival, there was kirtan and then a lot of people were talking. So I was talking with people and after that, I came for prasad to the prasadam hall. And I came quite late. So I saw that there was a sweet over there. The sweet was over. So the whole bucket was empty. I felt a little bad about that. And then I saw that there was another senior devotee sitting over there in the plate. And they had their sweet in the plate and he had finished his sweet. And then he started asking, hey, is there any more sweet? And he asked one devotee who was serving. He says, no, Pujitra. It was a very senior devotee. So he said, no, there's no sweet. Sorry. Then he asked another devotee, sweet is there? I was thinking, what is this? You got one helping. Why? Because all the other servers are much younger to him. So when he asked sweet, they all started, sweet again. They all started looking, is there sweet anywhere? So then they asked the second server, the third server. Fourth, I said, enough, we told there's no sweet, there's no sweet. We already had once. And finally, many times when devotees serve prasad, sometimes they make their plates in advance. Because in case the prasadam gets over, it becomes a problem. So some devotees had made their plates in advance. So one devotee brought sweet from his plate to give to him. And I started, this is too much. You already had one helping. I mean, actually taking somebody else's helping. And then as he was about to serve the sweet to his plate, I said, nee, I don't want, give it to him. He didn't get sweet. And he pointed to me. So he was asking sweet so fervently. That was not out of a self-gratificatory attitude, it was a service attitude. And if that devotee had not come with his plate to give that sweet, I would not have come to, wouldn't have come to know also. Why is asking that? So now you could say it's a logical inference. You know, somebody asking for sweet, they want it themselves. But we don't know what is going on in someone's mind. So we see an action and we assume a motivation. And that motivation may be right, may not be right. So ascertain means when some people are behaving in a particular way, why are they behaving like that? If we don't try to understand it, now in this case, it's a simple behavior and it's a simple understanding. But different people go through different situations in lives. And we really don't know people, what they have gone through in their life or what they are going through in their life right now. So instead of simply assuming that they're doing like this, that means they're like this. Now we can give them the benefit of doubt and try to find out. Can you go ahead? So once we understand this point, that value judgments cloud our vision, then we try to see people separate from the value judgments. And what does that mean? It means we try to understand people's background. To understand people's background means to understand what is on their back and what is under their ground. Sometimes when we want to understand people's background, that is, you know, sometimes what we want is, that person is a very nice person now, but maybe they did some bad things in the past. I'll find that out and then I will tell everyone, you know. You think such a great devotee, but you know what he did in the past? So Bhakti Siddhanta Swami Thakur would say, tell the story of Naked Pancho. Naked Pancho means, he said that there was a boy, when he was in many traditions, when children would be small, they would just run around and play unclothed on the streets. So he says there was this boy who would play around unclothed, and then his friends would be there, and then this boy eventually went on to become a high court judge. And there was his childhood friend, whenever he would see this judge, he would tell everyone, you know, I saw him without clothes. Well, that was maybe 30, 40 years ago. What does it make any difference now? But sometimes we want to go to people's past to know the salacious details of their past. But that's not empathic, that's not compassionate, that's not kind. What we are talking about, to know people's background means to know what is on their back and know what is under their ground. Can you go ahead and explain what this means? So what is on their back means what problems they are going through, what burdens they are facing. We just don't know that. Now, if somebody were walking twisted, you'll find it a little strange. But then if you saw they're carrying a huge weight on one side because of which they're twisted, then you'll understand, yeah, they're carrying a big weight. So physical weight can be seen, but mental or emotional weight can't be seen. Everybody has various problems in their life. And if we could just understand what problems they are going through, then we would understand, you know, if somebody is very irritable, well, why are they being irritable like that? Maybe they have gone through some big tragedy in their life. Sometimes we may know if somebody has gone through something. Sometimes we may not know. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a description of how Shrikanta Sen, he was the nephew of Shivananda Sen. And once Nityananda Prabhu got very angry with Shivananda Sen and he spoke harshly to him. So Shrikanta Sen was the nephew and he couldn't tolerate it. He said, Shivananda Sen is also a great devotee. He's also a great associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How dare Nityananda Prabhu speak like this to him? He felt very angry. And with a disturbed mind, all the devotees were coming from Mayapur to Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he just came ahead. He said, I don't want to meet Nityananda Prabhu. Just came ahead. When he came ahead in advance and he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, offered obeisances. Now, at that time, the traditional sort of the etiquette was, men would have an angavastra, a cloth above. And if they are going to offer respects to some respectable person, then take off the angavastra and then they offer respects. That was the etiquette. So when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he started offering obeisances. He forgot to take off his angavastra. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant who was there, he told him, you know, take off your angavastra. So as he was about to tell him like that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, stop. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, just whispered to him, says, by looking at his face, I can see that he is disturbed. So he is disturbed, that's why he has forgotten this etiquette. Don't disturb him further now. So, okay, etiquettes are to be followed. But if somebody is very disturbed at their minds, just pointing it out, harping it to them, it will only annoy them further. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited this sensitivity.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is of course God, so he knew what was happening.
But even if we don't know, sometimes some people are behaving in a particular way which is uncharacteristic. People are just nice, normal, nice, gentle, polite, but suddenly they start becoming very rude or arrogant or very abrasive. Then, rather than thinking, why is this person behaving like this and judging them, maybe they are going through something which we don't know. See, the nature of life is that sometimes problems come in like, they come in bunches. One after another, after another, after another. Sometimes what happens, we speak something to someone and suddenly they explode. And a small thing is like, can you just clean this up? Hey, you always find fault with me like this. They just go on a tirade. What happened? What did I do? Now if you go back, maybe they had a bad day. 10 things went wrong in their life. And the 10 things they were tolerating. And this was the 11th thing. And that 11th thing, all the accumulated frustration for the 10 things came out here. So we don't know what is on people's back. Why people are acting the way they are acting. So it's best to give them the benefit of doubt. In the Ramayana, when in Maricha, in the form of a deer, took Sita away. Allured Ram to go away because Sita said, please catch this deer for me. Then after that, when Maricha was shot, he screamed loudly in the voice of Ram. Lakshman, Sita, help! When Lakshman heard it, he said, this is a demon. Ram can never be in danger. But then Sita, she was so aggrieved, so agony struck, so panicky. She said, Lakshman, go and help your brother. He says, no, Ram is in no danger. He says, no, he may be in danger, go and help him. So now at this point, Sita was so beside herself with anxiety. So if something happens to Ram, what will happen? Please go. She somehow wanted to make Lakshman to go. So at that time, she spoke words that cut Lakshman more than the arrows in the toughest of battles that he had fought. He says, I know why you are not going. You have an evil eye on me. You want to enjoy me for yourself. And that is why you came with your brother and he was just waiting an opportunity. Now that Ram is in danger, you think you will be able to enjoy me, but I will rather die than be touched by you. Now when Lakshman heard it, such a thought had also not entered in his mind. Shocked. He said, you don't know what you are saying, Sita. And he said, I cannot stay with you when you are speaking such words. And he left from there. He made a Lakshman Rekha and he left. But eventually when he came to Ram, Ram was just running back. Ram realized it was a conspiracy. So Ram was running back. Why have you left Sita? So then Lakshman told what had happened. He says, she was just anxiety. Why did you take her word so seriously? So then they both realized it's a conspiracy. They came back. But by that time Sita had been abducted. Now eventually, when Sita and Ram were united, Lakshman was all united. No, Lakshman did not tell Sita, you spoke like that to me, apologize to me now. He didn't hold it against her. Sometimes in tension, people speak and do things which is not characteristic to them. So we don't have to see intention in things that are done in tension. When somebody says or does something in tension, when there is a lot of tension, a lot of pressure. So don't see intention in that. Sometimes things happen. Sometimes in relationship it happens. Sometimes I do some mediation. I don't do so much, but some of my friends do a lot of mediation. They say sometimes people, we meet people and say, 25 years ago in that conversation you said that to me. 25 years ago. Now what happens, I'll talk about this part in the next session when I talk about appreciate a little bit. But the point is that sometimes something might just hurt us so much and that thing may not even register in their minds. So what happens? Okay, if they had no malicious intention, there's no need to hold it against them. So if we understand that, so Ram helps Lakshman understand that Sita, she did not have that kind of suspicion about Lakshman. But at that time, she was in such anxiety, somehow Ram should be protected. She wanted to goad him to go out. So, if people speak certain things under certain pressure of certain situations, they're having a lot on their back at that time, no need to hold it against them. No need to hold it against them. So, if sometimes we understand that, you know, some people are vulnerable to certain things. Some people, you know, they can 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, some people love to do multitasking. The more things that are going on in life, they feel life is stimulating. Some people feel, okay, I'll do one thing, then I'll do the next thing. Then I'll do the third thing. So now some people, if there are just too many things to do, hey, no, not now, I'll do it afterwards. So they may just come off a little gruffly. That has got nothing to do with who we are. Sometimes we take other people's actions very personally. But it's not always about us. Sometimes, you know, one time one devotee came to me and he said, are you upset with me? I said, no, why, what happened? He said, you know, last time you came to the, I came to the temple and you were going to give the class. I greeted you, but you didn't greet me only. I said, really? I don't even remember. He said, you know, we are walking along that way. He said, oh, no, that time. It was just like the hall was here, the Vyasasana was here. He said, open the door and I was going to go inside. So my whole consciousness, I had to give the class now. And he greeted, I didn't even notice it that time. So what happens is, it's no need to judge people based on some incidental actions. So we don't know what people are going through. And occasionally if somebody acts in a particular way, just accept it. All of us have difficult moments. Sometimes we ourselves may act uncharacteristically when we have difficult moments. So what's on the back is one thing. So sometimes if we, instead of judging people, if we just try to hear from them, try to learn what is going on in their life, then we may understand, we will become more understanding of why they are acting in a particular way. Second point is, what is under their ground? What is under their ground means, what has shaped their conceptions about themselves, about others, and about life at large, about the world at large. We all are shaped by our upbringing, by our association. So many things shape the way we perceive the world. And it's very easy for us to, from our perspective, judge others. So, a few years ago, when I started traveling abroad, and I went to America, I found that in India, often we make jokes about how people in the West are so attached to their dogs. You know, people, Prabhupada would say, if you don't serve God, you will serve dog. So people are very attached to their dogs. So I often hear that kind of jokes in my classes. When I went to America, I found that many devotees also have dogs. So I was a little taken aback. But then there was one devotee, you know, for him, I saw his dog would go with him everywhere. Now, practically the dog was right next to him. I was thinking, it is so attached. So then I saw when he went to the restroom, the dog went with him to the restroom also. Hey, what is going on? I said. Then I finally, because we are a little close to each other, I got a little close to him. Very, very intelligent devotee, very, very senior, very learned, very respected devotee. Then I asked him, you know, why is this dog there with you always? So he told me that he has got epilepsy and he gets fits. And this is a trained seizure dog. Seizure dog means that if you get fits, the dog anticipates and then that dog starts barking, or the dog comes in the way to cushion the fall. And then the dog also barks and alerts others. So if that dog has a band around its neck, and if a seizure dog is barking loudly, then the neighbors see and they call 911 or something. So he said, this dog has saved my life twice. So my doctor has told me that you can get these seizures at any time. So always have this dog with you. So this gives a whole completely different spin. I had no idea that there could be something like seizure dogs also, therapy dogs. So one of the things which I have learned is, after traveling across the world, I have come up with my own understanding of humility. Now humility means to acknowledge the complexity of reality. Humility means to acknowledge the complexity of reality. Now we come from our perspective and we think, this person is behaving like this, it must be like that. But what is their background? What is their situation? We don't know. So often, when we start interacting with people, we start maybe living with people, working with people, we think we know them. But actually, even if you have lived with someone for many years, still we don't know them much.
No, we don't know everything about them. We don't know what all is going on in the other aspects of their life. Even if they share their hearts, though they share all of their hearts, or even if they're sharing their heart also, still, they may be influenced by certain things which even they themselves may not be understanding.
So in general, if somebody is behaving in a way that is annoying us, that is troubling us, that is irritating us, now we can't wish away our annoyance. We can't wish away our irritation. We are being troubled. But we don't have to assume that they are doing it intentionally. We don't have to assume that they are bad people who are out to hurt us. See, you know, it's obvious. It's obvious what you're doing is hurting me. But no, it may not be obvious to them, or so many other things may be going on in their life that they may not be thinking that this is actually hurting us. So this is not to in any way say that what they are doing is right, or that we should just bury our hurt feeling. It is just that between our hurt feeling and their hurtful intention, there's a big jump which may not be true. No, it's said that sometimes people do high jumps, long jumps. So if somebody do high jump, you may fall down and you may injure yourself. So jumping from too high or jumping too long might be injurious. But the most dangerous jumping is jumping to conclusions. Jumping to conclusions. So when we see a certain behavior and we assume this person is like this, that kind of jumping to conclusions can ruin relationships. You go ahead. So how do we ascertain? I said ascertain, try to understand why is the person doing like this. So actually it is a very deep human need to be understood. To be understood. It's just as the body needs oxygen, the heart needs understanding, especially in close relationships. And if somebody is not getting oxygen, they may do anything at that time. Some, because it's a matter of life or death for them. To get oxygen, they may do anything. They may just grab something, pull something, tear something down. Somehow they do get oxygen. So like that, people feel choked when they feel they're not being understood. So what happens? We are here, they are here. What we see is their actions. But why they are doing those actions, we make some assumption about their motivation, about their character. But people need to be understood. So if we just, in our relationship, we just learn to hear. If somebody has done something, rather than, oh, no. How many times do I have to tell you to do the right thing? If we start a conversation like that, what is going to happen? That means we have come to that conversation already, the trial is over, the judgment is done, now only the punishment is to be delivered. You know, how do we expect that kind of conversation to lead to anything constructive? It's like any court of law, there is a defendant who is given a chance to have their hearing, and the plaintiff says that side, and then eventually a decision is made. But many times we come into a particular situation and say, I knew I could never count on you. Now, when people see this like attack on themselves, then what happens? If we see it objectively, it's humorous. But when it happens to us, it's not humorous, it's terrible. So it's like, say, issue X has happened. And from issue X, a person makes a character attack Y. And then this person gets angry, and then person A, Y makes another character attack Z. Z, you know, you do like that, you are like this. And then that issue is forgotten and there is a world war happening. Or something else entirely. So instead of rushing to jumping to conclusions, if we just learn to hear. Now hearing does not mean agreeing with people. It just means letting them have their say. Just like a judge will let the defendant have its say. Now the defendant may be completely wrong. Defendant may be spinning a story by which they're trying to rationalize what they've done. They're trying to justify what they've done. That's okay, that can be evaluated later. But the defendant is allowed to have a say. So similarly, we have to hear, and our hearing also has to be without evaluating. Sometimes when we are speaking with someone, even before we complete our sentence, that other person is starting to reply. That means, in such a situation, they are not hearing to understand. They are hearing to respond. So it's like a war is happening, and the conversation is actually meant to be for communication. It is not meant for fighting a verbal war, especially when it is between people who are working together. So as soon as one person completes the sentence, immediately the other person speaks, even before they complete. That means their idea is, okay, this is the sword that has come to hit me, and here is my sword to hit back. And not only going to hit back, defend myself, is going to hit them back again. So hearing to understand is very different from hearing to respond. Now, it's not that we shouldn't respond, but we focus on understanding. And I was at a temple in America. There's a GBC and there's the president. So the president was telling me that I am working on this art of hearing. So it's made a dramatic transformation in my life, in my management skills, in my relationship with others. So then I was talking with the GBC over there. He said that, you know, I was called for a meeting, and one of the temple council members said, I want to meet. So then when I came for the meeting, I found that all the temple council members were there except this president. And they all said, you know, we have complained about this. And they all said, you know, either that temple president goes or we go. So the temple president was actually very competent, very, very competent person, but a little bit domineering. So then this GBC told me that, I told him that, you know, you just have to improve your people skills. Ah, that president said, I'm already working so hard. You know, I'm working so hard to make this temple. Why are people so ungrateful? He said, no, people are not ungrateful. People see you as too demanding. No, but I'm doing all this for Krishna. They're also doing it for Krishna. He says, no, but I'm working harder than them. Huh. Yes, that is true, but no, you are working according. The temple person was more like a full-time devotee working for the temple. Others were volunteers. He says, you're working hard, that's true, but they're also working hard according to their situation. So he's all that. You just don't defend yourself. Try to understand them. And then this temple person told me that I went and talked with all the devotees and spent about, because some people are just like, fix it, you know. Do this. Just give orders. Do this. He says, I had about, there were four members in the other council, and I had 1.5 hours talk with all of them. He says, in those 1.5 hours, I spoke less than 5 minutes. And this was the opposite of my normal talks with them. Because I was the planner, and I thought, I am the planner, they are the executors. You do this. I think things are moving nicely. But he said that, just, okay, so when I did like this, you felt that I was disrespecting. Yes, exactly. When I did like this, you felt that I was sidelining you. Yeah, I have been in this temple longer than you. You know, actually the temple president told me that they didn't have to make any change. Just hearing them change the attitude. And after that, things are going on so much more smoothly. So it's not that ultimately if one person is taking a lot of responsibility, people also know that this person is doing a lot of work. It's not that people resent the contribution that they're making. But people want to be heard. And if you just give them some hearing, and in non-judgmental, okay, this is what your feeling was. Now, I'm not agreeing with your feeling. I'm not necessarily saying, okay, I'll change everything. That is later. But just if people feel understood, that itself is actually a big, big way to avoid confrontation. So, sometimes as devotees, you know, we throw spiritual solutions at everything. From spiritual religion, means, you know, if there is a conflict between two people, just chant Hare Krishna, everything will be alright. Well, yeah, chanting Hare Krishna is good, but now are you chanting Hare Krishna? The two people have a conflict and they sing Hare Krishna. You know, this rascal, Krishna, Krishna, this fool, Hare Hare, this idiot. So we are not chanting Krishna's name at all. We are actually simply having that mind replaying this. Just sit and talk. Let the other person speak. Just hear. Quite often, a lot of issues, not all issues, some issues just cannot be resolved, and some people might be such that they just try to defend themselves. And then there are other things to be done. But this is, when we try to understand people, we might feel that some people are so obtrusive. Whatever I want to do, you come in the way. You don't help at all, you just come in the way. But they may be coming in the way, not because they want to come in the way, but because they also want to be valued for what they are doing. Maybe you have the story of, in the Ramayana, of Hanuman and the squirrel. The squirrel was doing very little, and the Vanaras were doing much more. So they felt the squirrel is coming in the way. But what Ram saw was that you are serving according to your capacity, the squirrel is serving according to its capacity. So I accept everyone's service. So of course we cannot sit for hours and just become like a receptacle for people's mental garbage to be downloaded. That is entirely different. No? We know some people just keep talking. Then we have to be polite and at the same time we have to be firm. But some situations where, especially if our attitude is just fixing it, do this, then sitting and hearing can resolve a lot of issues. And people may not be obtrusive, people may have some other issues which you may not come to know. Next slide. Yeah. Can you go? I don't think this is the one. Can you go ahead? Yeah. As said, this is the one. Slight mistake. I'll conclude with this slide. There's this tragic story in the Ramayana of how Vali and Sugriv were best of friends. They were brothers and best of friends. Both of them were ready to give up their life for each other. But somehow, and this demon Mayavi came to attack them, came to challenge Vali. So Vali and Sugriv both went out. The plan was that Mayavi might have some associates and they might together attack Vali. So Sugriv would be there to prevent such treachery. So Vali was planning to have one-to-one fight, but when Mayavi saw that, oh, these two big people have come. Big Vanas, he fled. And then he went into a cave, which is a catacomb, deep inside. So Vali said, I will go inside, you stay near the door and you guard the door. Sugriv said, no, please let me also come. Said, no, you stay here. Stay here, don't go away. Guard this entrance. And Vali went inside for a long, long time, he was gone. And finally, Sugriv was getting more and more worried. And then he heard the demons screaming. He did not hear any sound of Vali. And then a complete silence. He thought that the demon has killed Vali. I'm thinking, Vali is much more powerful than me. If the demon has killed Vali, will I be able to kill the demon? And if I couldn't kill, he will break havoc in our kingdom. Thinking like this, he said that I have to stop this demon. And he found a giant boulder. He used all his energy and he covered the boulder, covered the cave. He came back to the kingdom, told the citizens what had happened. There was a statewide period of grieving, and they all said, now you have to become the king. Because Angada, Vali's son, was very small at that time. And Sugriva reluctantly, the heavy heart, accepted that. And after a few days, Vali came with red eyes, disheveled body, fury on his face. And when he saw Sugriva on the throne, charged toward him, you traitor, you wanted to seize my kingdom and that's why you trapped me. Now, Sugriva was so happy to see Vali alive and he got up from his throne to offer him respects, but Vali started pounding him. Sugriva tried to speak to him, but Vali just could hear bang, bang, bang. He started beating him and Sugriva thought Vali is so angry. Vali was known to be short tempered, so he said, you know, let Vali cool down, then I will talk with him. So he said, but Vali was beating him so severely that Sugriv would have died by that beating. Sugriv fled from there. And when Sugriv fled from there, for Vali, that confirmed Sugriva's guilt. Why would he flee if he was innocent? And then afterwards, he started thinking, you know, Sugriva tried to kill me once, again he may try to kill me and take the throne. So better I only kill him. And he started sending various agents to try to kill him, and Sugriva had to go all over the world to try to find some place to hide. And finally he came to Kishkindha, which was the area where Vali couldn't come because he had been cursed to not enter that area. And he stayed there. And eventually Ram came, and then Ram arranged, when Sugriva told the whole story about how he has been banished, how his kingdom, how his palace has been taken, his wife has been taken, he has been deprived of everything. Ram felt very, very angered by this injustice. And then Ram arranged for Sugriva to get back the kingdom. So when Vali was shot by Ram, at that time Vali was initially angry. He says, "No, why did you kill me like this?" So there's a whole analysis of how whether Ram's killing of Vali was fair or not. But the important thing is, at that time, Ram says that, you know, you were an aggressor against Sugriva, and aggressors deserve to be killed. So at that time, he spoke, you know, Sugriva was your brother, he served you with his life, how could you treat him like this? That time Vali realized, when his ego had been pound to powder by the arrows of Ram, by the arrow of Ram piercing through his chest, and then the arrow-like words of Ram also penetrated into him, and he realized he had committed a terrible mistake, and then he reconciled with the Angada. But by then it was too late. Now in this case we'll see that both Sugriv and Vali jumped to conclusions. Sugriv jumped to the conclusion that Vali was dead, and Vali jumped to the conclusion that Sugriv betrayed me, and both of them, their conclusions were wrong. However, so in a sense both of them were wrong in jumping to conclusions, but there is a significant difference in the two cases. In the first case of Sugriva jumping to the conclusion, he did not have the opportunity to seek a clarification. If that demon would come out, it might be just too late to stop that demon. But for Vali, that situation was not there. Vali could have sought clarification. Vali could have let Sugriva speak. And Vali was much more, so Mayavi, Sugriva suspected that he was more powerful than him. But Vali was more powerful than Sugriva. Everybody knew that. Sugriva also knew that. So in that sense, Vali did not have that much danger from Sugriva. But he did not give it a chance. So without ascertaining what is the motive, he acted. So this is one of the surest ways, you know, if you want a formula for ruining relationships. This is the formula. Judge without understanding. Judge without understanding. And especially we succumb to this if we are very intelligent. Now, if we are intelligent, we think, I understand things. And we look at a situation, immediately we think, I know why is this person doing like this. But it may not be like that. I'll talk in a later session about how, if we have judged without understanding, how we can make amends. But here, the thrust of the session was, we have to ascertain. We have to better give people the benefit of doubt and understand why they are doing what they are doing. So I'll summarize. Now, when some unwanted situation has come, some person is behaving in a very unpleasant way, unpalatable way, at that time the first step is we accept it. And then we have to ascertain why they are doing the way they are acting. So often we see an action, and assume a motivation. We make value judgments about why people act the way they do. And those value judgments cloud our inner vision, just as say our palms would cloud our eyes. And if we have decided that somebody is lazy, somebody is rude, then no matter how politely they speak, we see their politeness also through the filter of that rudeness. And we don't see people as they are, we see them as we think they are. So sometimes people may behave in a terrible way, but that may be just uncharacteristic. So I talk about, to understand people's background doesn't mean to know salacious details to defame them, like the naked Pancho. But it means to understand what is on their back and what is under their ground. What is on their back means what is it that they are going through right now, what problems they are facing. Then they've gone to 10 bad things in a day, and we happen to be the 11th thing, we do a small thing, they may explode. So what is done in intention, we don't have to assume intention in it. It's like Lakshman did not hold Sita's words against her. And what is under their ground means, what is their worldview, what has shaped their self-conception, what is it that they are, you know, what are they going through actually in life? What they have shaped their conception of themselves, of the world. So I talked about how seeing a dog with someone constantly, he is very attached to the dog. But then, it's a therapy dog, seizure dog. So we don't know. So humility means to acknowledge the complexity of reality. Not thinking that because this action, that means this must be the intention. We inquire. I talked about how, when just as our body needs oxygen, our heart needs understanding. So if people don't feel not understood, then they may just go wild and do various things. So if we just sit and hear, non-judgmentally, not hearing to respond, it's not a verbal war where you have thrust this weapon, I got this weapon to hit back. No, just hear to understand. If we do that, we'll find that we may not have to make major changes, but people will become less obtrusive. People will trouble us less because they have a need to be understood. Just hearing someone is also valuing that person. And then I talked about how if we don't take the time to ascertain, we may judge without understanding. And that may lead to disaster. That may lead to, it's like Vali and Sugriva were the best of friends, but they became the worst of enemies, and eventually Vali had to die because of that. So for us, if we learn to ascertain, not judge without understanding, then we can avoid potential misunderstandings, and we can reconcile even when misunderstandings do happen. So in the next session, I'll talk about appreciate. But before that, are there any questions or comments? Yes, please.
What is the situation? How do we supposed to understand the situation where two people are talking to each other and then the fourth wants to listen to, you know, they want to express themselves?
They want to?
Both of them.
Can you move the mic a little bit behind? No, move the mic a little bit.
So they both want to understand, basically want everybody else to understand them. So both of them, as you said,
okay, so you're saying that when two people are having a conflict and both of them want others to understand them, so what do we do in that situation? Yeah. If two people are having a conflict and at that time both of them feel that I'm not being understood, and both of them try to understand, try to come, say, start speaking to clarify their position, so what do we do in that time? Yeah, it's a very difficult situation in general. There's one principle Chaitanya Bhagavat says at one level, that if two very great Vaishnavas are having a difference of opinion, then don't take sides. So this doesn't mean that we always stay uncommitted. There is talking about if there are two very exalted devotees. At that time, somehow after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed, the followers of Advaita Acharya and Nityanand Prabhu got on very well. But the followers of Advaita Acharya and followers of Nityanand Prabhu, they would sometimes have conflicts. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is addressing them that don't think that they may have transcendental conflicts, but don't ascribe that. Don't create conflicts among themselves based on their transcendental conflicts. So that is one principle, but that is not necessarily to be applied every time. See, we have to see the three broad situations or three broad circumstances. One is that if we are in a position of authority and there are two people who are speaking out their side of the story, then we need to give a fair hearing to both. And then we have to take a proper decision. And even when the proper decision is taken, it has to be properly communicated. In general, in the devotee community, what is right and what is wrong is not as important as what is uplifting. I'll talk about this again in ACT if I get time, but let me bring it here. No, there is a principle of right, and there is a principle of right beyond right. Right beyond right means that, you know, fact by from the facts, I am right and you are wrong. That may be true. But what is beneficial for people? What actually helps someone to grow? What helps to resolve the situation? That's what we should focus on. So in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the story of how when Prithu Maharaj was performing yajnas, he performed 99 yajnas, and then he also performed the 100th yajna. At that time, Indra came in various ways and tried to interfere. Stop the yajna, disrupt the yajna. And finally, Prithu tolerated for a long time. Then Prithu said, you know, this imposter, I'm going to kill him. And he came with weapons to shoot. At that time, Brahmaji came. And Brahmaji told him that, just forget it. Indra is attached to the reputation of having 100 yajnas. So you just have that reputation. You just be satisfied with 99 yajnas. It's very difficult at that time. You know, I'm on the verge of making a record. It's at that time, it is a matter of religious prestige to be able to do 100 yajnas. You know, in India, about 15 years ago, something, there are two prominent cricketers. One of them was the captain. Both of them were very good batsmen. So there was this other batsman who was a champion batsman. One time there was a test match going on, he was on 190s he was. At that time the other batsman declared. And he said, you know, I wanted to make a double century, why did you declare? He said, for months upon months, this second batsman didn't talk with the first batsman only. He said, you know, you have hit so many double centuries, here we wanted to have enough time for our bowlers to get the other team out, batting team out. He just couldn't take it. He said, I want to set this record. So people are very attached sometimes. But the point is that Prithu accepted. Prithu could have said, you know, I am doing dharma, I am doing the yajna, and he is doing adharma. So why don't you stop him? Why are you stopping me? I am right, he is wrong. Why don't you stop him? But Brahma, that was Brahma's understanding, and Prithu also understood that actually Indra is immature. Indra is attached. If you tell Indra, he is not going to listen. So Prithu, you take the mature stand. You listen. See, the world is a very big place. If two people are having a conflict and the conflict is becoming ugly, it's best let one person take the step back. You say, no, but this is so important, this is a valuable service, I have done so much. Yes, it's true. And it's, if you have been invested in something for a long time, then it's difficult to step back. But we want to maintain harmony in the community. So it's amazing what happens afterwards, that normally when the yajna is completed successfully and if it's a splendorous success, then Vishnu comes, appears in a visible form. Actually, normally when the yajnas are done, the devatas simply accept the offering. Sometimes the devatas are visible, and on very rare occasions Vishnu is visible. Here Prithu renounces the 100th yajna. And then Vishnu comes. So his yajna is unsuccessful, but the purpose of the yajna is successful. He's able to please Vishnu. So sometimes in a conflict, the conflict is just becoming too ugly. Now it's one person has to become a little more mature. Stop it. Okay. Even if people think you have won, it's okay. Doesn't matter so much. Now Krishna will see that we are trying to maintain harmony. And the world is a very big place. There are so many different ways in which you can serve Krishna. We don't have to. So if we are in authority position, we try to make a fair assessment. If we are not in authority position, then if we are in a position where we are able to guide either of them, then this is second case, you know. We guide them, and we, not in a guide in a superior kind of sense, but just in a friend kind of sense, just take a back position now. You know, yes, it may, people may think that you failed, but whatever. But eventually, you know, how a person has lived throughout their lives, that matters much more than what is accused in a particular situation. Accusations come, accusations go. They stay in a part of our memory which is like sensational memory. We all want some controversy, we want some masala, we want some sensations. But the memory about the masalas doesn't last for very long. It's in controversy. The memory of controversy is such that whatever the latest controversy, everybody talks about them. But after a few months, some other controversy comes up and the old controversy gets forgotten.
So, Tam Sitiksha Subharata. So, if we are in a position of being a friend, then we can try to tell them that. If we are not in the position, if we are just part of the general community, and we don't have either the influence to assess and judge or even to guide, then it is best that we don't talk too much about it. No. One definition of gossip, prajalba, one definition of gossip is to talk about things which we can do nothing about. You know, he did like this, you know, she spoke like that, you know, this happened over there, that happened. Okay, so what? How do we have come here to practice Krishna Bhakti and go towards Krishna? If we can by talking help someone, then that is good. But if you're not in a position to help, okay, we get some information, okay. It's very difficult in general to know what has happened. I was currently some devotee that asked me to write a, history of ISKCON. Now we have a history of Srila Prabhupada's life, Lilamrita is there, but history of ISKCON is not there. So then there are many scholars also who have been trying to write it, but nothing has happened. So then I started studying it, and I started studying about how history is written. And then I realized one thing, history is like permanently disputed territory. Permanently disputed territory. Okay, this happened like this, or that happened like that. Sometimes the winners and losers have two completely different narratives of what happened. And who is right? Unless we are completely into the field, applying ourselves, we need to have some investigative historical skills to understand what is the reality. It's very difficult to know. So we in that situation simply think, how best I can serve Krishna in this situation? And if we can be of some, if in resolving that situation, or in giving some support and strength to some devotees who are burned by the situation, we can be of some help, we can be of help. But otherwise, just talking about it, it simply drains our energy, decreases everyone's morale, and diverts everyone from Krishna Bhakti. Okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes, Mataji?
Hare Krishna. If we are in conflict with someone, and we want to find out what their background is and what their back, what's behind their back and what's under their ground. What's the best way to find that out? Because, I mean, a lot of the times in our culture, we are afraid of confrontation because we don't want to make the relationship worse than what has already happened. And, like, for example, my mom always used to say that, you know, just keep the peace in the house, there's no need to discuss everything. If you feel bad about something, just leave them there and move on. So there's that philosophy of the other that, okay, if you feel hurt by something, we just take it and you try and be in some way. But then not everyone can live by that philosophy. Sometimes
keep
things within themselves and that results in worse consequences for anyone. So, also if we address some issues with someone directly, sometimes we can get taken aback because we're not used to talking about difficult things.
Yeah, it's a good question. So, if you want to understand people's background, what is on their back and what is under their ground, how do we go ahead and do that? Sometimes people say that even if you are hurt, just keep it to yourself and move on with life. Or if you directly ask them, they may just feel it's maybe too intrusive in their life. Yeah, let's say that there are two parts of the question. First part is that should we just let hurts go by? It depends on what the kind of hurt is. So there are certainly situations when small things happen, you just tolerate it and move on with life. Now, if a person is normally courteous, one day suddenly they speak rudely to us, okay, and that happens sometimes. Everybody has their weak moments, everybody has their bad days. So this depends on what the action is, how serious it is, and how seriously it is felt by us. Now, it's different people have different capacities to tolerate pain also. So some people, you know, if they, like, I was in America, I was in Phoenix, and I was going from one place to another. I was at the airport, I was taking some prasad. And while taking the prasad, it was soft, but in between there was a date seed. I suddenly chewed on the date seed
And so hard that along with the dead seed, my tooth came out. Just popped out over there, you know. And it was bleeding. So I was alarmed. Then I called the devotees over there and then I took a photo of that. And then in America, in the Western world in general, health is very expensive, even if you have health insurance. So we went to, I reached the destination, it was 1.5 hour flight. I reached the destination, we went to a doctor. He said that some injury was there. He said it will take little thousands of dollars to deal with it. Then I sent to one devotee in India, who was a dentist. And he said, how much pain are you feeling? It is looking very alarming. He said, but I'm not feeling much pain. He said, then I was going to come back to India in 15 days. He said, I'll deal with it at that time. So I'll give you pain medicine and you take the pain medicine depending on how much pain you feel. He says, no, you tell me, should I take the medicine? Says, no, this is subjective. Different people feel pain differently. Different people have different thresholds of pain. Different people have different bodies. So, just as in some cases, for some people, the same injury, the pain may be so much that they need a painkiller. Now, that doesn't mean that they are weaker people or anything like that. It's just their body is shaped differently. So, just as different people's bodies are shaped differently and they may need different dosages of painkillers or different prescriptions at all, whether they need painkiller or not. Similarly, with respect to emotions also. Some people are emotionally very sensitive and vulnerable. Small things hurt them a lot. And some things are different. Some people are different. That they just, okay, these things happen, move on in life. So, it's a person who can tolerate pain without a painkiller. Like that person telling, you also don't need to take it, just tolerate it. But they are feeling unbearable pain. So, we can appreciate the principle, but we have to work with the body and mind that we have. So, if we are feeling very hurt by it, then we have to process it. We can't just neglect it. So, that's the first point, answer to the first part. It is a valid point that small things have to be neglected. But what is a small thing is not objective. Something may feel very small to one person, something may feel like very big to another person. We can say our mind has a tendency to make small things big, that is true. But some things may just be so big that we can't wish them away. We can't just neglect them. Having said that, the second part is that with respect to dealing with trying to understand what is their background, let's say the three broad ways to do it. One is just that we start a conversation with the person about whom we have some questions, and we just ask some gentle or general inquisitive questions, general questions of inquiry. And depending on their response, we can decide. Maybe we can ask more questions. Like before we swim, we put our foot in the water to see how cold it is. So sometimes people, when people speak words, actually they're opening the door of their hearts and they are sharing what is in the heart. So some people are very guarded. And they will also see how our response is. If they see we are being very judgmental or we are going to use that knowledge against them, then they will not speak. But if we are seeking to understand, there is a language the heart understands. When somebody actually comes without any agenda to learn, people feel open. I want to open and I want to speak. So sometimes just starting with some basic inquiry, not directly confronting the issue, then it may help. Second could be that we could talk with some other devotees, some other people who know them. Not in the gossiping sense, but in the understanding sense. Sometimes, some person, you feel this person is a terrible person. And then there are some other people who say, this is such a wonderful person. What do you see so wonderful in that person? I don't see anything is wonderful. Then when we ask them, not for gossip, but what do you find so nice about this person? Or just politely ask that, what inspires you about them? And then they start telling. Then we get a whole different understanding. And then that time they may also tell something about that person's other thing in the background also. And third is, of course, there is always, in every community, there's a gossip mill. There are humor mongers who keep sharing things. Now, through that, we might come to know about some things, about someone. And at that time, if that is affecting us too much, then we have to clarify it, even if it means leading to misunderstanding. The third way is actually quite an unreliable way. But if somehow we already got some information from there, then that haunts us constantly. Maybe did this person do like this actually? I heard this about this person. then we have to clarify. We can do it in a non-judgmental, gentle way, respectful way. This is what I heard from somewhere. I would like to know what the reality is. So then people will open their hearts. So I would say the first or the second is the safest way. But if the third has happened, but whether we go the first or second way might be optional. But if the third has already happened and is troubling us, then then first or second we have to choose and find out. Okay? Thank you. So one last question, then we will have our lunch break. Okay. So two questions we have. Okay. Yes, my buddy. The mic is coming. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. The question is, sometimes in a relationship, one person's maturity or a higher acceptance can enable the other person to be less mature.
Yeah.
Constantly. So how do we try to balance?
Yeah, that is true. Now, if somebody is more mature, then that may lead to the other person continuing their immaturity. Yeah, this is actually a phenomena called as in codependency also. Like one person is an addict and that person makes a mess of their life and their partner or their some relative, they create a mess and the other person keeps settling that mess. And that way this person just keeps doing that wrong thing again and again and again. And this codependency is damaging both the addict as well as to the relative of the addict. Yeah, so that is always a possibility. I would say that again there are two, three broad different situations. One is that person has some weakness in some area and the other person is good in that area. Now sometimes some weaknesses are such that it's very difficult to overcome them. Like some people just, some people are just not very good at managing money. You know, they just keep a mess of things. Then if they try also, they just can't do it. It doesn't work for them. Then they may say, okay, you take care of monetary matters, I'll take care of this. So then instead of saying that this is simply facilitating their immaturity, it might just be a complimenting them. It is an issue, but it is not really a serious character flaw. As it called, codependency is the third case, an extreme. Where that person is doing something which is very damaging to them and damaging to others. And the first person is letting them do that damaging thing. So that is unhealthy and that should be avoided. And the codependency says, this person has to reap the consequences of their actions. Only then they will reform. If you keep shielding them from the consequences, it's you who will be hurt and they will never reform. So, so we have to, we cannot always, so the third extreme is, third situation is not good. So at that time somebody has to intervene and tell this person, you step aside now. Step aside. But then the first case is where it's just a weakness. It's just some ability which they lack. Then you can compliment. And often that's how relationships work. You know, all of us, if I have some weakness, somebody else has some strength. Then they take care of they manage the area of my weakness and I manage the area of their weakness. So then we complement each other. So in that case, it's not facilitating immaturity. It's just balancing because nobody is good in everything. And we all can work together. The in-between situation is where, so in this situation, the other person also acknowledges I am weak and appreciates the other person for supporting them over there. And I was at a place and there was one devotee who had come to meet me and the devotee was leaving. So his wife called him. He told him, have you taken your pity bag? Have you taken your wallet? Have you taken this? Have you taken this Bhagavad Gita you had brought? Yeah, I have taken all this. He said, look at all this. So then, I was wondering what is happening. He told me that, he himself told me, I keep forgetting things. So whenever I'm going from one place to another, my wife calls me and asks me, are you taking everything? So I told him, is he going to find it odd? He says, no, we got used to it. It's better that I not forget things and then have to run around to find out where they are. So we do this and we move forward. Now, I appreciate his humility in accepting that publicly. Not publicly, just in front of me he told that. But it's just, he's valuing her for doing that. But the second situation would be that somebody else compensates for our weaknesses and we take them for granted. So we start dumping it on them and we start demanding it from them. There, it may not, there something we have to adjust. And what has to happen is, either we or someone else has to tell them that. You cannot just expect and demand from others. This person, even if it's a close relationship, everybody's an individual, everybody has their responsibility. So that I'll talk about, you know, appreciating each other in the relationship. So sometimes we just have to compliment each other. But if we value what the other person is doing, then that complimenting doesn't seem like a burden. It's just a service we are doing. We do something for them, they do something for others. They do something for us. So if it's in the second situation, then through some way or the other, there has to be a greater appreciation of that fact. And so it's not that being unable to do something is immature. That could be. But the real immaturity is not accepting one's limitation. It is not accepting one's limitation and not learning to live with the limitation, or not learning to work with the limitation or work to rectify the limitation. Just thinking everything is all right as it is. So that is what is immaturity. Okay? Thank you. One last question and we'll stop.
So we have two questions, one from the audience and one on your desk.
Oh really? Okay, where is yeah. So should we do it now or should we do it later? Is this sorry? So you complete this? It's a very mild S. if it's already quite late for lunch, we can do it later also. I think we'll do it later. So you can announce about when we are going to meet. Thank you very much. La Prabhupada ki Gaur Bhaktavinda ki Jai Gaur Premanande.
So lunch will be served to your left on this side. These doors will be opened up. We have 1 hour for lunch. And after that, we're going to come back and we're going to have an interactive group activity. So please.